You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with another guest episode for the Business Broker Growth Show. So glad that you're tuning in. I'm excited for this. It's going to be fun. I have with me today, Mrs. Jeannie Keene. She is owner and CEO of Sunbelt Business Brokers of Roanoke and Lynchburg in Virginia. I got that right on the first shot, Jeannie. I'm very excited. Jeannie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jason. I'm so excited to be here. And you did get that exactly right. Thank you.
I know it's fun. And by the end, I'll probably be a pro at it. I'll sound like a good commercial and jingle for you. So this is fun. There's so many things we're going to talk about. For the audience tuning in, you're going to understand why I'm so excited. Both your background, your business dynamic, and the partner that you have in the business, and then you know what you focus on, the things that you have, things that you've done. And so let's dive in. I want to get started with your transition from what you used to do to what you do now as a business broker. I don't want to spoil it because I want you to say it in your own words. So let's talk about what you were doing before you got into business brokerage.
Yeah, good question. It's kind of a crooked path, I think, to say the least. So my background is as a licensed clinical therapist, which many would argue comes in handy as a business broker. I also have a project management certification. I spent a number of years in the healthcare industry, leading teams in that kind of area. And my husband is retired from the state police. He was a trooper for about 25 years. And then the last portion of his career, he was a certified fraud examiner in the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Attorney General's Office. So here we like to call him the closer or the negotiator. He's just so good at being able to handle the people, handle the kind of difficult negotiations that can come up as part of getting a business transaction completed. And I think all of those skills really lend themselves to just the nuances that come with being an effective business broker, because what we're really managing is the people. We're having to manage a lot of people, a lot of emotions, and a lot of dynamics. And those skills have really served us well in this role. And we've also been on every side of the table. We've bought businesses using a broker. We've sold businesses using a broker. And now we're the broker. So we can really see a deal from every angle and have an appreciation for what that buyer and seller is going through at any given moment.
It's so fascinating. I love all of that so much. And then just to be clear, just to wrap that together, is that you and your husband are partners in this. And like you said, like he's more of the closer side. It's fascinating. Years and years ago, I had a more sales persuasion focused podcast based on a book that I wrote. And I remember having someone on who was with the police. He was with the military, with the police, ran security, and then did now training. And we talked about it. And he's like, yeah, like if you're a really good, effective police officer, state patrol, state trooper, anything like that, like you're using sales and persuasion because you really got to de-escalate conflict. Like you don't want bad stuff to happen. And so you're just trying to persuade
people. It used to always amaze me, Jason. He could call somebody on the phone and somehow have them agree to meet him in the parking lot to serve them with a warrant. You know, he really is good at persuading people. And yeah, we've been doing this for about a decade. We've been business partners for probably 15 to 20 years. I've kind of lost track now. but yeah, so he's very good at what he does. And I think as an office, the way we've chosen to kind of set things up in our office, and I know we'll probably talk about this a little bit later, is to surround ourselves with the people who have the skills that maybe we don't. And he and I are a good complement to one another because he's very big picture, I'm very big picture. He's very much in the weeds, looking at the financials, and I'm over here having all the big ideas, but I just need someone to operationalize and implement them. So that's a nice way to structure your team so that everybody's got a little bit of the skill that you need.
Which is fascinating, because if you go stereotypical with someone who's on the sales side, right? Like you said, the closer side. Historically, that person would be more of the outgoing promoter, big vision, visionary, not detailed person. But it's fascinating if you really study good closers and people who are, like, let's say in law enforcement, is they're detail oriented, they're process oriented, they're going through those things, and then they know how to persuade on top of that versus the other way around. And what's interesting too with you, this is why I love the combination of both the project management but also the licensed clinical therapist side, is that anybody who's done any level of sales or dealing with humans at some point, like especially brokers, but just in general, it's like, if you're doing it right, it will feel like therapy. Somebody's going to be crying at the end of some kind of conversation, right? Depending on what's going on, it feels very draining. And if you know, there's a lot that goes into it, if you're doing it right, because you're really there, you're listening, you're helping the people.
Yeah.
Where does that come in from your side? Like, where are you really, like, leveraging that experience?
I think having the emotional intelligence and the being able to better understand your stakeholders are going to fall into, if you're familiar with a DISC assessment, they're going to be a certain personality type, and better understanding how they like to be communicated with. We have a good understanding that some sellers really need more information, they need more handholding, they want to know exactly what we're doing, and they just need a lot of information and a lot of nurturing. And we consider our office, kind of our internal motto is, we have big city knowledge with small town service. And so we have a good understanding of how our sellers like us to communicate with them, and then we serve that up. Some sellers, hey, you go list and sell my business, call me when you have a lead, and we'll take it from there. So we're just good at being able to read our clients and know what they want and need from us. And then we've surrounded ourselves with the support staff. We have a wonderful office manager. We have a wonderful marketing lead, and we're able to hand things off as need be to the folks that need to take care of them in the way that that seller wants to be taken care of.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. And I think one of the challenges that humans have is that we generally think everyone sees the world the way that we do and communicates, love languages, all those kind of things. And so I love how you're thinking about that, breaking it down, and then applying that, where it's like, who needs more, who needs less? And then also being tactical and practical about that, right? Instead of, like, everyone gets everything, it's like, okay, what do you need?
Right.
And how do I serve you?
Right. Or where you're trying to shove a, you know, square peg into a round hole, it doesn't always match up that way. And so much of what we do is relational. Then I think that's where we set ourselves apart a little bit, is just having that relationship with our referral sources, with our clients, even with our buyers, with our lenders. We pride ourselves on having a good reputation, and that's critical in this industry.
So one of the other things you said a few minutes ago when you were talking about your background is that you've bought businesses with a broker, you've sold businesses with a broker. Did those experiences, were they positive, great experiences where you're like, we want to be like that broker and that's amazing and it set the tone? Or is it the other end where it was like, that wasn't so great, and if they can do it, we're going to crush this industry and do a great job?
Very good question. We had a good experience.
You don't have to name any names now.
And it's kind of a funny story that you ask, because we had an excellent experience with our Sunbelt broker as a buyer and as a seller. And when we had sold our last business, we tried to call our broker to see what he had in his inventory for us to be able to purchase maybe another business from him. Didn't call us back. We kept leaving messages with him. We were finally able to reach him. And as is a hazard in this job, he had bought another business. And he said, I'm too busy running my other business to take care of Sunbelt. And Mike said, we should go to lunch, because we had been on every side of that table. And we thought we could do this just as well as the next guy.
Yeah. That's an interesting storyline too, because in conversations I've had with brokers, I'm hearing that more and more It's kind of the nature of any business where you're in something where you have the ability to purchase and be a customer also. You end up like, hey, that's a good business. Maybe we should buy that one.
Yeah, we had a wine shop for a minute too, because that sounded like that would be a fun business to own.
Yeah, and?
Yeah. Well, we grew business pretty dramatically and then sold it to our manager, which we were happy to do because we created a first-time business owner in that transaction.
Yeah. Interesting. So with what you're doing now, especially with the office, with the team that you have, is there any specific segment that you focus on, any niche size industry or things that you're finding, you end up gravitating more towards?
Mm-hmm. We're sell side advisors primarily for businesses with a revenue of 10 million, 15 million. Although we do have some other brokers in our office who will take smaller deals. And I like to tell, folks that call us with a referral or business owners who call us, if it's a profitable, cash flowing, sellable business, and the business meets our other criteria that I talked about earlier, we will list that business and we will probably sell that business. It's just not necessarily listings that we would make an effort to go out and solicit for, but we really feel strongly about supporting our community. We think economic development is dependent on the successful transition of all of these businesses that are going to be coming to market. As we continue to learn about the silver tsunami, and the numbers that I've heard are 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day, about 40% of them own businesses, and about $10 trillion in wealth is going to transfer, or in assets is going to transfer over the next decade or so. So we really think that our departments of economic development and our municipalities need to begin preparing and ensure that we're educating business owners on what the successful transition of a business looks like, allowing enough runway, allowing the right team, getting your team in place years in advance, because too many business owners think of selling their business as a single event in time rather than a multi-year process. So the more that we can help support our community, help successful businesses transfer ownership, that's kind of karmic. Like, we're just trying to do our part to give back to the community.
And it's interesting too, because I think you were the one when we had a conversation about the podcast months ago, you were the one that told me about the fact that there's 10 to 12,000 people turning 65 every day and forecasted for years, like at that rate.
Right.
And so if we think about that, and then you think of the 40% own a business. And then if you think about the other stat that's very popular, and passed around a lot, is that 80% of the businesses don't sell. What are the, you said it's like people think it's a single point or they're not ready. I know owner dependency is an issue. Like, looking at your team dynamics, say you on the therapy side, your husband on the state trooper closer side, and his part, like, how do you handle that when you have those conversations? Like, obviously, give yourself 3 years to get ready as a business owner, but like, what are those conversations like? What are the biggest things you're seeing right now?
Yeah, I mean, we talk to a lot of business owners who say, you can send me some information, but I'm not ready to sell right now, maybe in a year. So then we need to really be specific about educating those business owners that this is really a multi-year process to be successful, and allowing yourself enough runway can make the difference between closing your doors and potentially, generational wealth if you do it correctly. 3 years is going to be the look back period that a lender uses to go back and look at financials. So you need at least a solid 3 years of financials. 5 years would be even better. Just allow yourself enough runway, but at least 3 years of solid financials to be able to have those numbers tell the story of the business. The other things that we talk to business owners about, the same things that you've heard, ensuring you have systems and processes in place and reducing owner dependency. And I'll give you an example. We had spoken with a spa in another state, a spa owner, And he was an incredibly savvy business owner. And when we did his valuation, it came back not exactly where he'd hoped it would be. And those are conversations we have every day as well. And sometimes owners are just like, okay, you know, thanks a lot. When in fact, that's really an opportunity. It's an opportunity to know what your business would sell for on the open market today. And then that gives you some lead up time, hopefully, to be able to improve those numbers. So he said, I'd really like to get another 800,000 to a million out of my business. So I'm going to take the next year. I'm going to add some service lines. I'm going to remove some service lines. I'm going to reduce owner dependency. And he checks in with me every month or two. We're still talking. Here's the things I'm doing. Do you feel like I'm on track? What do you think buyers are going to be looking for? Like, that is the template for how a business owner should think about transitioning their business. So I can almost guarantee when we get to the end of the 8 months or a year, he will have increased the enterprise value of that business by his 800,000 to a million, because he's laser focused on doing that. So a lot of times business owners come to us, like I said, we give the valuation number and it's not where they'd hoped it would be, but that informs them that there's a wealth gap between what they wanted and what they really need. So they have some choices that need to be made at that time. But I look at it as an opportunity. It's not necessarily a bad news or a bad number. Just use your time wisely. Figure out from an exit planning perspective what you need to do to increase the enterprise value. Do your research and better understand what buyers are going to look for in the business, and then move swiftly in that direction. So hopefully the numbers improve.
Yeah. So it sounds like that guy, that business owner, is the poster child of what everyone would want for a future client that's just on a mission and checking in and proactive, versus what I know. And I'm curious how often you see it, which is the owner that comes to you and says, I want to sell and I'm done with the business, or something has happened and they're done today. Like, they don't want any part of it today, but then it's not in a condition they're going to get the value that they want for it on the market.
And if there's some questions that we ask ourselves when we're thinking about a listing, and it's not just numbers based, it's, is this a business I would buy? If the answer's no, then, you know, that's a red flag for us. Is the seller motivated? If the answer's no, that's another red flag. Is the seller easy to get along with? Are they sending you the information that you need in a timely fashion? That speaks to their motivation as well. But, you know, if it's not a sellable business, you're going to be hard pressed to find a broker who's going to list it for sale, at least a broker who's been around for a while. You know, there have been times that we've auctioned off equipment and sold real estate, but to have a true transferable business, you're maybe not going to have that. And it's unfortunate when business owners have put their blood, sweat, and tears for decades into a business. And oftentimes they think maybe a child is going to take over the business, but they've probably worked day and night and sent their child off to school to a good college, and they get their degree in something else and they have no interest in coming back and running the family business. And it's just lack of planning. And then an owner has an issue like death, divorce, disillusionment, declining sales, or disability. And at that point, it's kind of too late, because you just don't have enough runway. There's not enough planning. You're trying to go back and recapture all of those things that should have been done over the course of the last 3 years. So it becomes much more of like a firehouse sale.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, that mode too. And it's one of those things that's, you know, it's fascinating. And being on this side and speaking with, you know, brokers like yourself that are experienced, have been doing this a long time, it's wild to think of how few business owner founders out there actually realize what it takes to exit a business, how to maximize that value that they could get, and then what a broker does, an intermediary, like this whole system. Like, everyone knows real estate and realtors, but like, this is this whole mysterious thing. And you said something that's interesting. You know, this is my sales and sales leadership side kicking in a lot with our conversation together, like in the stuff that you're saying, is that, you know, one of the things you said is when you and your husband especially are looking at a business to list, is this a business I would buy? And what's fascinating about that is that if you have a listing that you wouldn't buy yourself because you know it's not good, that's like selling something you don't believe in, right? That would be like working at a Ford dealership, but you drive a Tesla. It's like,
right.
You're selling something you like, you could buy it, right. But I would never buy this right. myself. And so the moment where you're like, this is a great business, like, hey, maybe we should buy this. That's the moment where you're going to make sure it's presented well, it's listed well, you're excited, you're going to, you know, 100%. Get the right for it.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, you brought up a good point, Jason, is I've had some conversations with folks in local departments of economic development lately, and they tell me the same thing you just said, which is so many business owners don't even know that there are business brokers and what business brokers do, that there's someone who can help represent them and support them through the entire process of the sale of their business. So I think we're doing a better job as an industry getting that information out there. And I think there's more certified exit planning advisors, there's more folks kind of dipping their toe into business sales. But I think we have a long way to go.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is the associations like the Carolinas, Virginia Business Broker mm-hmm. Association, the IBBA, the international one, shifting from internal, you know, for brokers, by brokers, educational training to external, like how do we shift our focus to educating business owners about the industry of business brokerage.
Yes, there's more and more education out there, and I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, I think that's a big deal. Now, one of the things I know, because we talked about this, and I hear this a lot, and I think it's so important for it to constantly be talked about, is you talked about the things like owner dependence and the systems and the processes and the financials and the 3 years and the 5 years. Part of that financial part that I think is always important to keep repeating so that people might find it, so they can work, you know, have that successful exit in their mind where you know, it's not just the country club valuation, but like there's some actual value they're going to get for the business, is what small business owners do from a tax saving strategy in the moment and how that affects them on a sale. Valuation.
Yeah, because we've all been trained to reduce our tax dependency at the end of the year on our tax returns. Our accountants are always saying, do you need to buy a piece of equipment? Do you need a new truck? Do you need to go buy some things to reduce your tax liability? But that's why that planning a few years ahead really pays off, because for every dollar that you add to the bottom line of your tax return, depending on the multiple that industry and that business would sell for, you could be adding $3 to $5 to $8 to the sell price of your business. So you don't want to reduce your tax liability for the 3 years leading up to the sale of your business. We've never listed a business for sale that was too profitable, right? I mean, you know, lenders are going to look hard at the profitability of the business because they want to ensure that when a buyer is coming to them and they're looking at whether the debt service on the loan is going to be able to pay the buyer a salary and, you know, cover that debt service, that's where you need the profitability on the tax returns.
If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so interesting to think, you know, I made a dollar, so let me write that off with some expense so I can save the 20-30%, whatever, you know, based on what the taxes might be. And so you're going to save 30 cents versus if you just let it ride, where's that $1 worth?
$5.
$8, right?
Right.
And so how many years of tax saving strategies does it take for you to actually be ahead versus an exit? And it's, you know, if you stopped at 3 years in advance, so you have 3 years of good books, then you're probably in a better place, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that's interesting about your industry, which I think is so fascinating for business brokers and intermediaries, is that in certain states, minimal number of states it requires a real estate license, and that's about it. And then, you know, most of the states out there, you could just call yourself a business broker tomorrow and just start helping people with this. Where have you seen that affect, let's say, the business owners you end up helping? Do you see, this term just popped in my head, like some kind of refugees from people who tried to help them, or real estate agents who are like, yeah, of course I can sell your business and why not? And like, where is that? Like, where do you, you know, what's your feelings on that? What's your experience been in that dynamic?
Isn't that kind of wild that you can just, you know, hang a sign out and say, I'm a business broker now? And I don't think folks who do that have a full appreciation for the complexity of this industry. But yeah, we've listed a lot of businesses that sat stagnant on the market for a year or two with a realtor, because most realtors will tell you it's a far different, more complex base to value and adequately represent and negotiate and sell a business than it is to list a piece of real estate that kind of sells itself. It's the complexities involved. Every deal will feel like it's going to fall apart at least three times. And, you know, the other misconception that a lot of sellers have, we hear this a lot, is I have someone interested in buying my business, so I don't need a broker. Mm-hmm. And what they don't understand is finding a buyer is really the easy part. It's everything that comes after that where the stakes are really high. And if you don't get that right, the terms could really cost you in the end. I just had a conversation with a new business that we listed just a couple weeks ago. Same thing happened to him. He said, you know, I had somebody interested in buying the business a couple of years ago. I had the buyer on the hook. He started asking me for things, and I very quickly realized that if I didn't get this right, that the stakes were too high for me to try to do it myself, that I needed someone who specialized in selling a business to know. Because let's think of it this way. If your business is of the size and industry that private equity might be interested in purchasing your business, you better believe they're going to come with a team of attorneys and a team of analysts. They will try to lock you into a 3 or 6 month exclusive due diligence period of time, which we try to prevent from happening. Oftentimes, owners will take their foot off the gas. They're kind of lulled into a sense of, well, I have a buyer, I have a private equity group who's going to buy my business. Then the private equity group will come back and they'll see a dip in sales and they'll lowball, and the seller will feel like they have to take it because they're so far down the path with this private equity group.
Yeah.
So finding a buyer is the easy part. And especially these days, there's so many folks coming from corporate America. There's so many groups and companies educating buyers on how to buy businesses. Every third scroll on my social media feed is how to buy a business with zero money down, which is a whole nother topic because that's never going to happen. But finding buyers, the easy part, the higher stakes decisions that come afterward, and then trying to negotiate your own business sale, trying to interview buyers because they're coming in fast. There's so many buyers out there looking for businesses. They're much more savvy than they used to be. They probably have a spreadsheet of comparison of financials. So if your business isn't rising to the top, especially if there's going to be more and more businesses for sale on the horizon, you're going to be left behind. So buyers are more savvy. They know what they're looking for. And one bad decision when it comes to the terms of that sale, and you could lose tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. And it's I've had conversations with other brokers on the show because I always like to find out how somebody became a broker. A lot of times it's either had a business, sold it with a broker, it was amazing, sold it with a broker, it was terrible, and like I can definitely do well. Or a couple of times I've heard sold the business, did it by myself, no broker involved, lost a lot of money, made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
Want to make sure that I make sure nobody ever does that again if I can help them, you know, avoid doing their own root canal, right? Like, let me just help you because that's not going to go well. And so it's also interesting, and you know, any business owners listening to this, I think one of the things to think about too is that you're selling a business, it's probably a once in a lifetime only time you're doing it. It's probably not something you're doing over and over again, or the one that you're doing now is probably the first and might be the only. Buyers, not just the PE, but all the other buyers that, you know, buy some guru's course, they are analyzing business and they are way more equipped and experienced at attempting to buy businesses than you yeah. are at selling a business.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, there's some stats. The Exit Planning Institute says that if you list your business for sale with a broker, it's 85% more likely to sell. And it's likely to sell for 20% more than it would otherwise. So you're offsetting the cost of commission and you're having someone support you through every step of the process. We tell our business owners, we are working in lockstep together. We are hand in hand. We don't get paid until your business successfully transfers ownership. So we are together through this entire process. And I think about my own experience as a business owner. I barely had time to run an ad for someone to run the cash register or to do a menial task and interview those folks and get them onboarded. It's beyond me to think about trying to interview someone to determine if they're going to be a good fit to buy your business while you're simultaneously keeping your foot on the gas so that sales are growing or at least steady. So you're going to negotiate with a lender. You're going to perform due diligence on your own. It's just an unrealistic expectation to think 99% of the time that it's something that you can do yourself.
Yeah. And let's go back to the therapy background that you have. Because one of the things that I know, because I've heard it so many times, is that a buyer comes in and they have questions, or they want different financials, or they're like investigating the financials and want to know why there was a dip or why is this. And I know humans enough to know that that business owner, founder who's put everything into their business will feel attacked or get defensive. And like, why do they need to know that? Just buy my business. Don't ask those questions, right? Like sometimes it's like, please don't ask because I don't want to explain it. But you know, how, like from your side with the dynamic, especially with you and your husband, yeah. like how do you handle those conversations? Yeah. I know the value is there, but I'd love to hear like the value of having an intermediary in those conversations right. to kind of separate the parties in those moments and in those cases.
It's kind of two-pronged. We hope we can uncover most of that information ahead of time. And when we take a business on to list for sale, we want to know everything there is to know about that business. We have a very extensive questionnaire that a seller completes or we complete with the seller in order to create our confidential information memorandum. So we hope we're going to uncover some of that on the front end and then better understand the story behind the dip in sales. Because like I said earlier, if the financials tell the story of the business, if there's a reason why there was a dip in financials, then that would make sense to be able to convey that to a potential buyer. But if it doesn't make sense, and if you haven't prepared for that, then it becomes a much more difficult conversation to have. Early on, we're going to be the only ones having conversations with the buyers because we want to determine whether they're ready, willing, and able to buy the business, whether they're a good fit for that business. And it's later that we take the time of the seller, that we take them away from their business to begin to have conversations with the buyer because we want to know all of this up front. You keep your foot on the gas. Your job right now is to keep running your business just like you have been. We're going to filter out all of these tire kickers, and we're only going to present you with a buyer that we think is a good fit. So once that happens, it's almost sometimes like a game of telephone that you used to play. Like the buyer will say something that could be insulting to a seller. And Mike and I are somehow able to filter that and soften that into a question that's going to land a little better with the seller. We're also able to have those conversations with lenders. We're really just quarterbacking the deal. We're ensuring that everything is moving steadily towards closing. You have a lot of players in this game. You've got transaction attorneys, you have CPAs, you have lenders, you have buyers and sellers. You know, so you may have a couple of attorneys. So we're trying to be sure we're monitoring who's supposed to be doing what and within what time frame, and then we're following up to be sure those things are getting done. So we're kicking the can slowly and steadily towards the closing table.
It's funny. I'm laughing to myself. I'm thinking, this is my words, not yours, is the telephone game thing. And I'm just imagining a buyer going, these financials are terrible. And this business looks like it has problems. And then I could see you calling the seller and being like, they have some questions.
They have some questions.
Overall, it's good. There's a lot of potential. It looks like, you know, almost like a realtor would show a family a house that, you know, is just terrible. Like the house is bad, but it's like, they're just spinning it.
Yes. And we're helping. The other thing that we do, and I know we'll talk about this later, is automating the things that make sense. So we're trying to be high touch in the places that make sense, but high tech in the places that make sense. So we have a whole buyer lead process that we're educating buyers about every step. Here's the NDA. We have videos for that explaining this is the non-disclosure agreement. This is what it means. And we reiterate, and that means you cannot contact the seller or the business because that's a disaster and that has happened before. Mm-hmm. We explain to a buyer, what is a confidential information memorandum? This is what that looks like. Once you get the confidential information memorandum and you have a chance to review it, here's a link to schedule a call with our office. And then we go on to help the buyer prepare for their call with the broker. So we tell them some things that they may want to look at, some questions that they may want to ask the broker, because that will be the next step. And then beyond that, we educate the buyer on here's how to prepare for your call with the seller. So hopefully we've mitigated some of that on the front end. And then we'll also prep the seller on how to prepare for your call with the buyer. So another advantage of having someone kind of quarterbacking and being sure that everybody's playing nice.
Yeah, I think that's great. Before we move to the next section, I want to revisit something you said earlier, because I think it's fascinating. We kind of, we glossed over, but you said it is big town. I think you said big town knowledge, big city knowledge, small town service. So yes. One of the things, like, especially for what you do, it's Roanoke and Lynchburg, Virginia, very specific, very small. You could not be a part of Sunbelt and you could just try to take on the world. You mentioned it about the economic impact of businesses. Like, why? And I know it's super important to you, but like, where is that just really important as well to businesses in that area to have somebody that is a part of the area?
Right. We do pride ourselves on supporting our community, supporting business. Some things that we really take to heart would be, like I said a little bit ago, if it's a small business, but it's sellable and it's transferable, we will take that business on and we will help that business owner transfer ownership. And we're going to answer the phone if you call us. And I think that's where the small town service comes in. Unfortunately, I think there are some brokers in the industry who fight real hard to just get the listing. And then that's kind of the extent of it. It goes on biz by sell, and then they wait and see what's going to happen. And we're working that listing in other ways. If you call the office, you're going to talk to one of the senior brokers. You're going to talk to one of the owners. We're always going to be available. We return calls within 24 hours. We want to better understand what issues our clients might have or our potential clients might have, and we want to address those. So we make ourselves as available as we possibly can to anybody that's working with us.
Yeah, and I think that's important. And obviously, you know, some of that is a reaction to ensure you're giving that good service, which you would probably do anyway. In the little that I know you, I think that's just how you and Mike are probably wired. But then you had that experience where you were trying to buy a business from the previous Sunbelt person.
And he didn't call us back. That happens a lot. We hear so many times from buyers surprised that, I can't believe you called me back. Yeah. I've left, you know, I've called 20 brokers and nobody's returned my phone call. Which is kind of, that's, I don't understand that, but yeah, it happens. It happens. So be sure if you're thinking about selling, just be sure that you're understanding who you're doing business with. It is a relational business and it's a long sales cycle. We're going to be working together for a long time. So be sure that you choose well.
Yeah, and it's so important because it is a long-term thing, right? It's And this is the important part for business owners to understand as well. It's a long-term thing. It's a longer relationship and a process you've never gone through before. And there's so many unknowns. So kind of like you said earlier, is that you want to make sure it's a business owner that you want to work with, that's responsive and basically pleasant and good to work with. It should feel the other way as well. Is the broker responsive? Are they somebody you're going to enjoy? And, fundamentally kind of like a therapist. If you have a therapist, is it someone you're going to want to listen to when they tell you the hard truth? Are you going to accept the things they tell you that you might not want to hear? I think that's important from a business owner side, with their broker.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yes, all of that is critical. We've got to have a good working relationship. If it's strained and difficult, it's not going to be a win-win.
Yeah. Is it somebody you want to go into battle with as right. this thing dies 3 to 5 times and tries to like just stop itself, this transaction, because humans are involved? It's not real estate. It's not a house. There's way more involved. So I think that's all fascinating. All right. So let's transition into the marketing growth part, right? So you've been doing this for 10 years, right, as brokers. And I know there's a lot that you've developed. You have the team, you have different marketing things that you've done. What do you put on that list? Let's start with what you have on that list of growth strategies for business brokers.
Well, like most brokers, our referral pipeline is important. And that's all the things that we are all hopefully trying to do, which is establishing a relationship with our local accountants. And we even have a good relationship with our other certified exit planning advisors, because in my mind, it's the perfect handoff. If they're working with, and they've been working with a client for a year or two, preparing their business for exit, then it's a natural baton pass to a broker to actually list that business and kind of take it from there. So there's a few things that we do around referrals that kind of go above and beyond that. And that would be, and I would encourage other brokers to think about it this way, be sure you have a good relationship with your small business development center. If you have a SCORE office, if you have a small business supplier diversity office, be sure that they know who you are as well. There may be an opportunity for you to go into some of these, like we have some small business associations outside of the chamber where maybe they're just more like municipality or locality based. And maybe they're pulling business owners together from a small city and they have a morning breakfast once a month. Be sure that there's not places there that you can't be a resource. And I'm even happy to give unbranded education. I know the Small Business Development Center prefers to have unbranded content going out to their audience. And I'm happy to do that because, again, we just want to educate business owners on how to successfully and hopefully profitably transfer their business. So we do a lot in terms of giving back to our community. I think it's more than just a clicks-based business when it comes to marketing. It's so much more relational than that. And sometimes it can take a long time to build up that reputation in your community. So be sure you're always doing the right thing by your clients, and they're going to tell other people about your work. So that's been a great way for us to get business, too, is from previous clients.
And what I love about all of that as one big umbrella kind of strategy is it's all about the long game, right? Like mm-hmm. the unbranded content, as I think about it, when you're giving it to the SBDC or SCORE, and they just want to share it. That's just you sharing. Kind of goes back to the karmic decisions that you guys have made, with who you like to help and what you want to do as your part is, given that unbranded content, you're not going to be able to track it. It's not going to be a measurable return on investment. Like somebody's right. going to see that and then want to talk to you, but you've just got to do that. You've just got to plant seeds. A previous mentor of mine says it's all about, you planting seeds that grow up to be trees that other people sit under that you have no idea, right? Because you just never know where it's going to lead to. And that's all you can do. All you can do is all of that stuff. And just
I love that, Jason. Together. And that's what we've been spending the last couple of years really being intentional about doing. And that's giving back in that way. I joined a cohort called Lead Virginia, and that puts me in contact with folks for the next 9 months from around the state. But what it does more than anything is it informs me about all of the issues, all of the economic and employment factors that are affecting communities all over my state. So I kind of get an insider scoop. I'm building wonderful relationships with people who it may not even kind of make sense that we'd be mutually beneficial to one another now, but I think that's going to grow our network in a way that it's really hard for me to even understand now. And when we're talking about giving back educationally, we've also been asked recently to do some educational programming for an SBA lending department, because we have such a good working relationship with our lender pool that this one in particular said, would you do some training to help our underwriters better understand what it's like from your perspective? Because I'm not sure they understand the sense of urgency that you have or the things that they may be asking of you, maybe multiple or repetitive requests over time. Can you help them understand how that's going to impact getting that sale across the finish line for that seller? So we've even educated our lenders on what the process is like.
I love it. And again, all of that's the long game without a direct measurable impact. I think one of the things that I see that's challenging if somebody approaches us for the work that we do is, you know, they want an ROI sometimes too heavily tied to certain things, right? Yeah. If I launch a podcast, you know, what is that going to lead for me? It's like, I don't know, right? Like, you're not running a sponsored podcast, right? The goal isn't monetizing your YouTube channel. It's about relationships and building trust and conversations and all of those things. So it's tough to say, like, here's exactly what you got from it. So again, going back to it, you just kind of got to do everything. So what else is on your list? Like, that was a lot. I don't know if that was one or if that was all of them, but that was a ton.
I think it was just one or maybe two rolled up together. But the other thing that's worth noting, and it took us a while to actually bring this to fruition, and it's getting the right people in the right seats on the bus. It was hard as entrepreneurs to find folks to sit in those seats that shared the sense of urgency that we had. And I was just, my office manager and I were just talking today about how much we've gotten accomplished in just the last 48 hours. And I was complimenting her on the sense of urgency that she brings to her role as managing our office. So you get the right people in the right seats on the bus, and then it frees you up to do all of the things that you need to do when it comes to building relationships, taking care of your clients, educating lenders, understanding what's affecting your economic development in your community. It frees you up to be able to do those things. And I think that's why I'm able to do those things today and for the last couple of years. Something else that I think it's important for brokers to think about, and I think it's underutilized, is the use of interns. It's hard when you get to that tipping point where you're so busy, you really do need to make a new hire, but maybe you're wondering how you're going to be able to afford that. We've had excellent luck with bringing on interns, and then they stay on, and then they're in a paid capacity afterwards. So don't overlook that as a means to being able to get good employees in your office.
Yeah, and I've actually done that in the past when I was doing consulting. It's been a while since I've done that, you know, where somebody's in college, they need college credit for an internship. It's, you know, depending on where you're at, it's allowed to be unpaid, or it's, you know, a lower wage because it's also part of the college, you know, experience that they need. And, you know, you pick the right person, and obviously you got to invest in them and teach them, but they're learning, they got experience, they want to be there. I've had some great experiences with that. And I love what you said too about getting the right people on the bus. I mean, you know, Jim Collins, Good to Great. First thing is get the right people on the bus and get the wrong people off the bus. And then once you get the right people on the bus, get them in the right seats. And then, like you said, it's game on. And the goal should just be that the team is better than not having a team. And then again, like you said, freeing you up. And I think that's one of those things where I see so many people struggle with, you know, they want to hire people, they don't know who to hire, or they're worried that somebody else is, you know, maybe too good. And you always want to, you know, somebody is always going to be better than you at certain aspects of things to free you up to do what you really should be doing.
Is it the saying, the cobbler's kids have no shoes?
Cobbler's kids have no shoes. Yeah.
It's hard for us as brokers maybe to take our own advice, which is to ensure we have systems and processes and reduce owner dependency. So yep. I think those are things that as an industry, we could probably do better.
I've been writing a lot about that more in the newsletter and some other content that I'm writing and another book that I'm working on. But it's really that, right? Looking at the, what would you tell a business owner who wants to exit, and what are the problems they have that is causing them to not get maximum value that they need to fix over the next 1 to 3 years, which is what we talked about earlier. And then now let's look at, you know, most business brokerages and you know, how they're set up.
Yeah. And it's silly these days not to have automations.
Yes.
If you don't have automations in the place where it makes sense, there's so many opportunities now with the use of AI to be able to pretty quickly implement those.
Yeah. Okay. What else on the list? Anything else?
I think that about covers it. In terms of, you know, we talked about referrals, automations, lender training, getting the right people in the right seats. And then we talked a little bit about pricing. I think most brokers make this mistake in the beginning. They list a business that they know they shouldn't, or if the valuation comes in lower than the seller thinks it should, and the seller convinces you to list that business for the price that they think it should sell for, and you know it's going to sit stagnant for 6 to 9 months, and the seller's going to be frustrated, and then the contract is going to expire, and they're kind of back where you started from, which is a lower price to go to market with to start. So that's a hard lesson learned that I would recommend brokers don't take businesses to market above the price that they think the market will bear.
Yeah. And one of the things that ties in with the automation and the things that you talked about, you mentioned earlier when we were, you know, just having our opening conversation, which is to automate and systemize what you can. Like you mentioned about the videos and the process you have, that what's left is the high touch, right? What's left is the human element of what's still involved and needed. And we'll talk about that in the after show, like what it takes in the future. But I think that's an important part. It's not just automation for automation's sake, but like, how do you make those things efficient? So you can take calls from buyers, and you can make sure you reach out to everybody in a timely manner.
And right now, I don't worry too much about AI taking our jobs. I mean, maybe down the road. But the work that I know we do here in the office when it comes to complex negotiations, that's where we need to be spending our time, is in those conversations. 100%. Those things can't be automated.
100%. All right. So let's move on to the next section, which sometimes I really enjoy, which I don't know what that says about me, but it's the deal that got away. It's the lessons of the lost deal. Not that I like anyone else's pain and I like to hear the failure stuff. I'm actually very positive. But I think, you know, as humans, we learn a lot from negative experiences, right? Like falling down. The way you learn how to walk is by falling down a lot, and then you just learn how to not fall down. And so it's always interesting, because I think, you know, the stuff that comes up, and I think what you gave me a prelude to what you want to talk about now, which is different than when we first spoke months ago, is you know, the lessons from this, both for brokers, for business owners, for buyers, transactional partners. So what is your deal that got away story?
Well, there's no shortage of lessons learned in this industry. That's for sure. That's probably why mine changed, because like, which one is the one to share? And we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. I want to read a couple of things to you, though, because there's a broker who's been doing this a long time. I don't know if you've ever heard the name Lynn Crick in Vegas, but no. Lynn did a good bit of training for Sunbelt. We have a lot of videos from him, and we touched on this earlier, but his big thing was, if the seller is difficult, don't take the listing, because they're going to be the best they're ever going to be when they're feeling optimistic about selling their business. And I can promise you, when it gets into heated negotiations later down the line, they're going to be much more difficult to deal with. So if they're already difficult on the front end, then we have made the decision not to take those listings. But this is a case where we didn't heed our own advice. We had, it would have been our largest listing to date. It was about a $12 million listing, and we got a little bit blinded by that. We ignored all of our internal rules and early warning signs, and we took that listing on, and it was a hard year. The sellers thought they knew more about how to sell their business than we did, and they were difficult in every conversation that we had. We did get an offer. We brought it to them. It was a good offer, and it just ended up falling apart. There was too much friction. We lost momentum. They were constantly second-guessing our input and our advice. So this really just drives home, kind of have those internal quality controls for what you think would be the businesses that you would want to list and the businesses that you would not want to list, and then stick with those. Even if you kind of get blinded by, you know, the bright, shiny object that could be, it's not going to be worth it in the long run.
It's so tough to not take that kind of listing where you're like, of course we could do this. This should be fine. Like, and ignoring the red flags, you know, and just looking at the positive or the hopeful, or, you know, what gets some people in trouble is they start running the calculation on the commission. They're like, oh, this will be worth it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, this is a
100%.
And you mess those. And I love what you said, that Lynn trained you on, is like the seller is at their best in the beginning. I have hired and or interviewed a ton of people over my career of dealing with sales teams. And, you know, in an interview, somebody is at their best. And if in the interview at their best, they're doing things that you do not want or like, it will not get better.
That's a great analogy. Yeah. And I had a couple of quotes that I thought were perfect for this that we've since kind of internalized. And that is, the right deal with the wrong seller is still the wrong deal. The wrong seller is still the wrong deal. And you don't overcome misalignment with effort. And that's what we were trying to do, is overcome misalignment with effort. We thought if we could just get this listing, that we would be able to overcome all of the red flags that we had seen in conversations with those sellers prior to.
Yeah. And it's really like that misalignment part is, you know, no amount of shaving that square peg is really going to make it the right thing to fit. You could try, but it's just not. What's the misalignment one again? One more time.
You don't overcome misalignment with effort.
I mean, you really can't. And it also, another way, like, it pops in my head, you can't want the deal more than the other person, right? Like, you know, or the relationship or anything, because it's truly a relationship game, right? So if it's not a good fit, no amount of trying to make it work is going to make it align better. So now, do you have those like in the office? Does everyone have those memorized? Does everyone have
a text? We do. I have a couple of quotes on the whiteboard that I look at across from my desk all day. and that's a couple of them. Yeah.
I bet you don't need those on the whiteboard anymore. I have a feeling that left enough of a reminder for you, that experience.
Yeah. And you know, most brokers, I'm sure, could talk all day about the deal that got away or the deal that should never have been.
Yeah. And that's really what it comes down to, right? So this, the deal that got away or the deal that fell apart, if you go backwards enough, should it have ever happened?
Correct.
Was there red flags that were ignored, or is it something where there's just like everything seemed great and then it just fell apart?
Yeah.
Like,
the deal you wish had gotten away.
The deal you wish you had never started. All kinds of versions of that. Well, Jeannie, I appreciate you being here and sharing that, especially sharing the story. And I know that's tough. I know I'm doing tough therapy mode every episode and making people bring up their traumatic stories and experiences. But I appreciate you sharing that. And hopefully some good lessons. I think, you know, it's really important, especially in the long game. Long-term relationship game, transaction game that you have with your clients, that like it's got to be the right fit. And if it's not, you're going to pay for it at some point. So I appreciate you sharing. For people tuning in, they want to get a hold of you. I know we'll have the link for the website. We'll have your link tree in there as well. The website is sunbeltnetwork.com/Roanoke-VA. But I know they can find you. They can also find you on LinkedIn. We'll have your email in there. Anything interesting or exciting that people should look for online, that you have that you're putting out there? these days?
Yeah, we have a couple things coming up. I think we're going to do a three-part webinar series with our Small Business Supplier Diversity Network that's going to be pushed out to all departments of economic development and chambers of commerce in Southwest and Western Virginia. We don't have dates for that yet, but that content is in progress. Also working on some content with Brown Edwards, a local accounting group, and they specialize in the manufacturing industry. So we hope to have either a podcast episode or a webinar out with them as well.
That's great. I'm excited to see those. I think that kind of content is always good. You just got to put more of that out there, you know, considering the stats of how few people know that you actually exist. The best thing to do, like we've been talking about a lot, is just to get all this out there and just share and network and referrals and connecting and content and all the stuff that we've talked about.
All the things. Jamie,
I appreciate you being here. I'm excited for the after show because I want to know what you think about the future and what you're excited about in this upcoming year. But no matter what, I appreciate you being here and sharing so much with the audience today.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
And for everyone tuning in, please make sure to connect with her. Check out that content. You know, if you're a business broker, there's a lot of things she shared that hopefully will help you in your journey for business owners and buyers and transaction partners. A lot of things to learn to help be successful as a part of this. And as always, until next time, stop hoping for deals, start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.